Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 409. This is FDH Lounge, managing partner Rick Morris. We have a very special guest coming on the program today for what will be a very interesting conversation. She is a TV star from Ex-Wives of Rock on the Fuse Network and also author of the book Dirty Rocker Boys, Love and Lust on the Sunset Strip, and we would like to thank her and her publisher for forwarding a copy of the book to us. And it's very fitting to have her on the program here where nothing is off topic, because we've been fortunate enough when we're entering certain areas to talk to guests, really to be able to start at the top. The top game show host probably of all time, Bob Barker. We've had him on the program now five times. Top mascots in the sports world. I think San Diego Chicken and Philly Fanatic, most people would probably agree, are one and two on that list. Top chicks in rock videos. I think we would all agree that tier only goes too deep. You've only got two contenders that are in that conversation. You have, of course, Tawny Katane from the Whitesnake video back in the day, and you have our guest today, who also is responsible for one of the most iconic moments in MTV history with that video. I just watched it again myself just to kind of prepare for the interview here and take it all in. What a deliciously campy video it was for its time. Very easy to see how it became such a big hit. The star of that, and as I say, author and TV star joining us today, Bobby Brown, coming into the FDH Lounge. Bobby, pleasure to have you on the program. How are you today?
Hello.
Hello. Yes, it's great to be able to have you on. Bobby, how are you today?
Hi, good. How are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine. Pleasure to be able to have you on the program. As I say, thank you for sending out a copy of the book. It was really very interesting. And the way that you traced in particular your upbringing in Louisiana all the way through becoming a beauty pageant contestant and doing quite well in that with the Miss Louisiana Teen USA 1987 all the way through to getting cast for the Cherry Pie video. It was really a very interesting journey up until that point, as well as everything that came afterwards.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, it was. I've lived an interesting life, to say the least.
Very much so. Yes, the book really chronicles that in some great detail. As I say, I was watching the video again just to kind of try to relive the moment, what it was like to watch it back then. And you and I are about the same age, so I was college age when that video came out, and it was really obviously the talk of a nation at the time when it happened. I was watching it, and, you know, it seemed like there might have been something else going on there other than talking about dessert foods there. Maybe there was some other subtext. I don't know. It was really kind of subtle in that way. But, seriously, it was a really funny video, very campy. What did you think were some of the keys to it? Did you think that the humor of it really helped kind of put it over the top? Or what was it about it that really kind of grabbed the nation the way that it did?
I think that, I think definitely all of the subliminal insinuations to sex and sexual, you know, behavior, you know, not exactly in your face, but kind of. And at that time, it wasn't really something that they were doing, you know, so it was kind of put out there, like the women's libbers were not happy with it at the time, and they wouldn't air it in Canada. And stuff like that. So I think that it was just like an overt subliminal sexual connotation, you know, for everybody to see. And it was, you know, and sex always sells and it always will. So I think that, you know, that definitely was, you know, one of the major selling points for that video and that song.
Yeah, not exactly a big pain to, you know, big time feminism, no question about that. I can see where some of the more sour feminist takes sites would have been, you know, really kind of down on that. But it was, again, you know, vastly entertaining to the rest of us, no question about it. And the book really makes clear as you're going through it. I found it was interesting in terms of just kind of reliving some of that trajectory that you were on as far as being on Star Search and being so successful with that, and that your career really was moving in a direction where something would have popped had it not been for that. Even if it wouldn't have been as big, you were on a trajectory for other things to happen. And, of course, as you make clear in the book, there were some other things that didn't happen subsequently. So I know it's kind of hard to say because, obviously, had you not been in the video and things worked out the way that they did, obviously your daughter wouldn't be here today. So it's hard to kind of take that part of it out of the equation. But as far as having any regrets about the trajectory of everything, that part of it aside, professionally, did you ever have any regrets about the way that things went and thought, you know, maybe I would have liked to have been on this other course where things didn't get as big, but it could have been sustainable for longer? Did you ever kind of wrestle with that in your head?
Yes, of course. I had a lot of regret about a lot of the things that, I kind of screwed up or didn't do or, prioritize. And, I lived in regret for a long time about a lot of things. And then after a while, I just decided, that's really no place to be, and I needed to do something about it, So, living in regret can just get worse and worse, and you can get stuck in that, in that frame of mind, and it's really negative. So I just, made a conscious decision to just, do something. So, it took me 20 years, but, it's a comeback tale, I think, and, now I'm back.
Absolutely. That's a very good message that comes out of it. And, again, I'd like to trace something else here for a second. We were talking about how some of the feminists didn't react so well to the video, something that I was kind of wondering about reading the book here, and that being that obviously in the LA rock culture, I mean, one of the cornerstones of it really is objectification of women. I mean, that's 1A. So when you were back on the market there in the mid-90s, obviously just having been Star ex-wife and everything that goes with that, you were going to be a very desirable commodity. But did you ever feel like there was a little bit of extra trophy element from having been in that video and been, oh my God, it's the cherry pie girl, I got to have her on my arm? Did you ever get the sense that that added a little bit extra to the whole trophy status back in the day?
I don't know. I mean, maybe in their mind, they never let me know that, of course.
Okay.
But I mean, people would, go around being like, oh, that's a cherry pie girl or whatever. Some people, because it's LA, nobody ever wants to seem impressed. So, maybe not so much here, or maybe they just didn't let me know that, but it's possible. I don't know.
I'm guessing the rock stars themselves or Leo DiCaprio or anybody, if that was an added benefit to it, I'm guessing they wouldn't have said anything to you, because I think that would have been counterproductive. Hey, would you go off with me? I want to be seen with the cherry pie girl. I think that would kind of get in the way of what they were looking to do. But I just found that to be kind of an interesting other thing that was making me think when I read the book, and there were so many different lessons, I think, that came out of that when you're talking about your story and the things that you went through. And like you said, learning how to deal with things without having the kind of regret that had plagued you for so long.
Yeah.
Now, of course, at the time, as you were living this, you obviously weren't thinking of what you were going through at the time, at least on a conscious level, as being any kind of a cautionary tale. And yet, you as a mother obviously know that that's how it's going to be read at this point in time here. So do you feel that there's a lot that comes out of this constructively for parents to be able to pass on to their kids and say, hey, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll lifestyle here, here's some consequences of it. Do you feel like it's serving a purpose in that way?
I do. I honestly do. I had a girl write to me from her high school and said that my book was like their theme or their motto to, kind of for women, like what not to do. I guess I could say I'm kind of the poster child for what not to do. because there's so many girls who think that it's so glamorous and like to come out here and date a rock star and do this and do that. They all had imagined my life was a certain way. They had no idea that it was the way that it was. And they, had envy back then, and now they don't, and realize that it was all for nothing. In their mind, basically. So I guess, it is a cautionary tale, and it is good advice to give, because, when I came out here, I didn't know what I was going to, what I was bargaining for, or what I had, lied in store for me waiting, So I just had to kind of live it. Nobody out here wants to warn you or tell you anything anyway, but everybody makes their own bed. So it's like, people could have told me a million things and I probably would have done it anyway. But definitely, it's definitely a warning in some respects, and then what you should or shouldn't do or get involved with, basically.
Well, that's a very good point. I just want to take a second and emphasize that and put you over very strongly for your honesty, because as far as being, as you say, possibly a poster child for what not to do, I mean, we try to be pretty uninhibited on this show, and yet it would feel very rude, I think, still for me to say that and for me to point at you and say that. So I just want to say again, I think that takes tremendous honesty for you to have come to that kind of conclusion and be willing to say that, because that can't be a very easy thing to say.
No, I mean, it isn't, but, as much as, I wish things had been different for myself, I would never want to see someone have to go down the same path if they didn't have to,
Absolutely. And we talked about this a little bit indirectly here in the sense of writing a book that, again, parents can kind of leverage certain lessons there for your kids. To get to a little bit more of an immediate level on this, what were your thoughts, knowing that very possibly at least your daughter might be curious enough to pick the thing up and read it? So, A, has she done that? And B, if she has, what were kind of some of your thoughts about it, other than the obvious kind of groaning that you must have done just thinking about her picture and some of the details?
Well, the funny thing is she and I are very honest with each other, and we're very communicative, and she often talks to me about personal things that I'm like, oh, my God. But I'm glad, because I always made it very clear to her that I'm open to talk to her about everything. It didn't matter what it was, because I never wanted her to feel like she couldn't talk to me about things. So we have a very open relationship when it comes to being brutally honest about things. So when I was writing the book, she was like, okay, when it was done, she's like, I'm going to read it. She didn't read it right away. Because there was a lot of press about a lot of sexual connotation in the book, and she was like, oh, God, it's kind of going to be gross reading about my mom, in that kind of light. But so she finally reads it, and she says, she first gives me all the typos, tells me how many typos there are in the book. I'm like, great. And then she says that she's really proud of me, and that she thought the book was really good, and that she had to kind of breeze through the sex parts because it was disgusting, but the rest of it was really good. And of course, the parts about her dad, I went over with her before I sent them to the publisher to make sure she was okay with everything and comfortable with what I said or didn't say. So she was really proud of me.
Well, all the stuff about the typos, you're probably thinking, where were you in the editing process? But well, that's indicative. That's a very honest relationship then between the two of you, that she could do that and you could feel at least somewhat comfortable with her being privy to that. And I think all of us can identify with your daughter in the sense that is nothing that we want to picture our parents doing at any point in time ever. People have been scarred and gone to therapy for less. So it's very brave on her part to have put herself in that position. But something that I was also thinking about in reading the book here, and we're talking a lot about the micro level of your story, but you seem to be somebody that would really be an authority on a macro level. One of these timeless questions in American culture here that we keep kind of coming back to, and it almost seems like at any point in history, it's always going to be the same thing of women love them, they're bad boys, don't they? And for you who had tangled with any number of them here, and again, that's the title of the book, Dirty Rocker Boys, Love and Lust on the Sunset Strip. To the extent that you've kind of analyzed this a little bit from your own experiences, what is it on just a primal level that drives that in women? Men would certainly love to know that.
Okay. Well, I really think it's a matter of age, I have to say, because, this applies to men too, and I don't know what it is, but, we're not raised to accept or be treated less than. We're always taught to be treated, really well or treat people well or don't accept any kind of, abuse or what have you. But you'll find that every time the first person treats you like crap, or rejects you in any fashion, you suddenly think you're in love with them. I don't know what it is, but that's in youth, mind you. Like, if somebody were to do that to me now, I'd be like, beat it. I don't need that. But back then, having never been rejected, you meet somebody that is as confident or overconfident or has some sort of an attitude that they don't give a crap about, what anybody thinks. First of all, any type of insecurity is a turnoff. I know that sounds mean, but when a person's insecure or has self-doubt, it's not attractive. So you meet these people that have this over, you know, the over-the-top confidence, so that's a plus. And then, you know, when a person doesn't need you, then you suddenly become, like, more attracted to that, I think. And, I mean, I don't know if you can say the same, but the first person that ever treated me like crap, I was like, I think I'm in love with them. It's so dumb. But it's true, right? So I think that it just is all a thing about rejection. Like, people don't understand, like, why are they rejecting me? So you don't leave. You're like, you don't get it. I have to stick around and prove to you that I'm worthy. Like, I think it's just, you know, trial and error, and you have to realize your own self-worth and know what to accept or not accept. And that, you know, that has a lot to do with growing up and, you know, making mistakes. But I think that that's the initial attraction. I don't know that it's necessarily bad boy. I think anybody, you know, who does that to anyone, that's what happens. That's just my opinion, though.
That's a very good explanation. That's a very thoughtful explanation. And yeah, I think it could be said that applies to men also. Sometimes men are attracted to women that are the same way. And again, I don't want to sit here and babyface my entire gender either and take the high moral ground on any of this stuff. Because again, when we were all watching the video back in the day, we were not admiring you for the quality of your brain. We didn't know anything about that, like good or bad.
Right.
So men tend to objectify stuff. I'm going to be honest about that. But that's really excellent insight on your part. That really probably has a lot to say about that. And I know from personal experience and from friends that have been very successful players that they kind of projected those very same elements you're talking about, Bobby.
Right. So, I mean, I just think that's just really what it is. But, you know, in general, rock guys or people in the rock industry, that's their persona. And that persona is very, you know, overconfident. Who gives a crap? You know, everybody wants to rebel to somebody somewhere. So that is just an appealing element, you know. You have actors who, like, want to be a rocker just because they want to seem cool like that. But really, rockers are just as insecure and have just as many, if not more, issues than any other person.
Absolutely. You hear that about a lot of professions, too. You hear that about comedians, that a lot of times that they're just kind of papering over insecurities and problems in their own lives. And I don't necessarily know that to be true. I don't know a lot of comedians personally, but it really is one of those things where the public thinks that they're seeing the true self. I guess that's kind of the overarching thing here when we're talking about celebrity, isn't it? That what the public thinks that they're seeing with all of you is obviously not necessarily what's really going on.
100%. 100%. That's exactly right. So, you know, to be envious of anything and, you know, in that realm is absolutely ridiculous because, I mean, I know a lot of celebrities and have, you know, entertained this industry for quite some time now. And I'll have to say that, can we cuss on the show or no?
Go ahead.
I don't have to. You could just say no. I just didn't
know.
No,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, they're more fucked up than anybody, basically. So, basically that's just what I was going to say. I mean, you know, we're probably the most fucked up people, and everybody's envious of that, and they really shouldn't be. You know, I feel like I've learned to be grateful, and that's been my saving grace, like just to be grateful for what you have and what you've been given, and that's when it's going to come full circle, and that's when you'll, you know, get abundance or prosperity, because until you know how to be grateful and humble, then you're never going to be happy, and things won't come to you. Good things won't come to
you. Absolutely.
So.
And this book does a tremendous job of examining what's happened in your life, the lessons you've drawn from that, of course, Dirty Rocker Boys, Love and Lust on the Sunset Strip. I know as far as present day and how you are dealing with that and leveraging everything into your life presently, this Ex-Wives of Rock show on Fuse, I know that is something where you've gotten a chance to kind of disseminate some of the kind of same things for the public here and how you've come to grips with the legacy of Bobby Brown and what you're looking to do moving forward.
Right. Yeah, I'm super grateful for that show, too. I mean, honestly, like, I couldn't be happier. I get paid to hang out with my friends and be myself. I mean, I can't beat that, you know?
Yeah.
So, definitely love the show.
I think anybody would agree.
Yeah, I love the show. And it's a good show. I mean, I'm not just saying that because I want it. I think that if anybody ever sat and actually watched it, they would become addicted to the show because we aren't like a typical reality show. We are non-scripted. This is true to life. They don't tell us what to say or what to do. And they just film us in our natural existence with, you know, the relationships that we have with the three other girls. And we're just crazy women who have lived these crazy lives and still have, you know, that element to us. And, you know, love each other, show the world, you know, our problems, our bad choices, our illnesses. We are honest to the core. And I think that that's what people relate to. And that's why we're doing so well, because, you know, the world can relate to real people, and we're not, you know, having babies with full faces of makeup on, drinking champagne in the delivery room, having parties every week in Beverly Hills. Like, our show is real, you know, and people can relate to that, and they appreciate it, I think.
Well, it's interesting also, too, that if you look at it, that really the book represents kind of the past of your life and some of the lessons that you've drawn from that and the stories that you're able to tell from that. The TV show seems like it represents basically the present. And then as far as the present into the future here, it would seem like your website where you're merchandising some of this rock apparel, BobbyJeanBrown.net, it would seem like that is a big part of your end game going forward, it would seem like. By the way, the spelling on that, BobbyJeanBrown.net, BobbyJeanBrown.net, and people can check that out. So what are some of the things you're looking to do with that website? You've got some very interesting rocker gear on there.
Yeah, I'm gonna add some more stuff to it. Like this week, I haven't really been focusing on it because I've been shooting the third season of X Wives of Rock, and we got picked up for 26 episodes this year, so we're shooting twice as much, which is awesome. And I just signed the audio book deal for the book, so I'm gonna be recording because I wanted to read it so, instead of having someone do it. So I'm gonna be recording the audio version of Dirty Rocker Boys for people to be able to download or purchase, and I'm really excited to do that because I think that'll be fun. It'll be like me reading a bedtime story or whatever, but you know, from my perspective and in my voice, and I think that it'll make it even more of a personal level, because when I wrote the book, I tried to make it on a very personal level. I wanted the reader to feel like they knew me and I was just talking to them, and made it easy for, you know, people to read, relate to, whatever. And that I'm a normal, real person, and I feel like by my reading it, it's going to be even more so like that. So I'm excited. I'm going to be doing that this month, and that's it. Just been working on the show and that and the promotion of the book and hoping for greater things to happen from it. You know, I'd love to go get a documentary or maybe a show from the book, possibly. I have all kinds of goals.
Yeah, I mean, it would seem like some type of a movie based off of it would seem to be a natural, and I can guess that the audio book is probably going to be a hit, because this is one of these books where, because of the particularly the juicy kind of celebrity anecdotes in there, those are the kind of things that you kind of picture somebody telling that to you anyway. So with you actually telling the story in your own voice, I would think that would make it pop even more.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun or funny, if not both.
It should be, yeah. There's a lot of stories in there, and yeah, people will be laughing when they hear some of them, to be sure. It's a very colorful scene out there, of course, the L.A. rock scene. And again, the place for the apparel, BobbyJeanBrown.net. People can check that out there. Bobby, a very, very interesting conversation, as we knew it would be. Love to have you back on to catch up with you subsequently here as your very interesting life journey keeps plowing along.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me call in today. You guys have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you for a great conversation, Bobby. I appreciate
all
you
right,
being
baby.
On, and thank you all for tuning in, everybody, to the FDH Lounge.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.